Hi, hello. We have a jam-packed episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. First, we've got trades on top of trades under more trades. Jaylen Brown gone. Kawhi Leonard gone. Santi Aldama also gone. Walker Kessler, you are a Los Angeles Laker. We talk about the trades. We talk about the signings. We bounce around what has been a wild week of free agency. And on the W side, we have an all-star conversation. Starters have been announced. We are proud. I am personally annoyed by one of the omissions, but we talk about the reactions. We talk about potential reserves. We have some fun digging through the list. We hope you enjoy. We're going to have some fun on this one. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy Friday. How are you?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. We have movement. We have action. We have things we need to discuss, and we're going to do that right now. So it's time to lock in.
And it's also time to hoop it up. We have so many things to talk about on this here podcast, Steve. We've got plenty of trades. We've got a lot of signings. Quietly, we got some summer league action happening over the weekend I'm excited about. We got lots of things to discuss on the W side, so stick with us there. But let's start with these trades, Steve, because we've had even more star movement this past week. Correct. The most recent deal is Jaylen Brown, who we talked about on the last podcast, like, hey, do we think this relationship is going to be mended? Do we think he's eventually going to be moved? What's going on there? Not only do we get Jaylen Brown traded from the Boston Celtics, he is traded in the division to the Philadelphia 76ers for Paul George, first round picks. Paul George is a Celtic. Jaylen Brown is a Philadelphia 76er. Let's just hang there for a moment, Steve. What was your initial reaction to these two wings being swapped for each other?
I mean, if we want to be honest, I was walking to put something back in the pantry and my phone was in my hand and it buzzed. Mm-hmm. And like, the banner that pops up at the top, it was like Shams. Yeah. So I was like, cool. All right. I expanded it. You know what I mean? I wasn't on like Twitter or anything like that. I just expanded it and I just see a picture and it's Jaylen Brown and Paul George. And I'm like, what is this? What do you mean? Because what do you mean, Nikias? We sat here, the last pod we did, because the Portland Trailblazers got Ja Morant. And everyone was like, hey, maybe this is the setup for a Jaylen Brown deal. I was like, I don't know. I think they're good. They're fine. It's fine. They're not going to do anything. Miami got Giannis. Miami got Giannis. Before Miami got Giannis, it was, hey, Boston might be willing to trade Jaylen Brown. I'm like, oh, I mean, I understand that. That's cool. I get it. That's Giannis. You got to explore every option. And then Jaylen Brown smoke never stopped after that point. And then Jaylen Brown became a Philadelphia 76er. And Paul George is a Celtic. It doesn't make any sense. If we just think about the Atlantic Division, Nikias, just the Atlantic Division. I know people of a certain age don't respect divisions. The New York Knicks won the NBA championship. We'll talk about it later, but the Toronto Raptors got Kawhi Leonard. The Philadelphia 76ers beat the Boston Celtics in the playoffs, and the Boston Celtics traded them Jaylen Brown. That's not how any of this is supposed to work. It's not how it's supposed to happen. I still am trying to process how we got here. Nikias, go find an uncle, go find your auntie, go find someone of a certain age. You're not supposed to trade one of your best players to the Philadelphia 76ers if you're the Boston Celtics. That's just not how it's supposed to work, but they did. And we're here. Mm-hmm. So, like, when you talk about what was my first reaction, it was shock. Because I don't understand how we got to this point. The Celtics, okay, cool. You had to break down your championship team. Understood. New realities. Got to do it. Jason Tatum got injured. You were able to have Jaylen Brown and patchwork. And you end up with a 56-win team and the 2 seed. And you lose in the first round. And then no more Jaylen Brown. Gone. Out of here. Adios. Done. He's a Sixer now. I don't know what to do with that. I don't know why you chose that. And it just felt underwhelming. And I mean, no disrespect to Paul George. Not a single inkling of it. I did not think in my wildest dreams that 18 consecutive years of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum discourse would end in Paul George. Paul George is a Celtic. my mind, and I'm of a certain age, and I'm going to pass you the ball right back. But there are people that who are, Dominique Wilkins was a Boston Celtic. There are only so many people that know that these days.
Yeah.
This feels like that. What do you mean Paul George is a Boston Celtic?
I feel like, weren't the Celtics like linked to Paul George when the Indiana stuff was happening? And then all of a sudden, like, what do you mean he's going out west?
There's a key word you said there. Indiana.
It's a long time ago, long time coming, etc. Okay, so one, I'm with you. I was also shocked when I saw that come through the pipeline. I was like, how did this happen? I was in the middle of writing a Lakers piece about their wild day of action, and we'll get to them in a little bit. And then that comes through. And so my literal first reaction was, this is the worst possible time for this to break, because I'm in the middle of this. And boy, would I would love to write about that if that was going to pop today. Second reaction was, what do you mean this is how it ended? Where did Philadelphia come from in any of this? Because we talked about Portland. Obviously, there was the Milwaukee spoke when it came to Giannis. And so for me, it's just like, okay, maybe it's going to be Portland, maybe Atlanta. If they accept the team option for Chanta Kaminga, let's cobble some salary together. Let's get him there. Houston, there was some smoke there. Like, maybe he's going to be there. I just didn't have Philadelphia on the radar. And so, like, I've been trying to wrap my head around that piece. Now, to the trade itself and swapping these two wings, I don't think you can argue, based on what we saw last year, and if you want to widen the sample, like, do I think Paul George, as of July 3rd, is a better basketball player than Jaylen Brown? Or does he provide more overall value to Jaylen Brown? Even just looking at the availability piece, he does not. This is a downgrade in, like, talent slash availability based on what we're seeing. I think it is clear that the Boston Celtics are making the bet that maybe he doesn't reach the highs of Jaylen Brown. There may be a higher floor based on the skill set that he has, and he may ultimately end up being a better fit alongside a healthier and higher usage Jason Tatum and a higher usage Peyton Pritchard. I am fascinated to see if that bet ends up being proven correctly. Because as we know about the Boston Celtics structurally, this is a team that wants to space the floor in a certain way, can get into different spacing alignments, but they want to keep the floor spread to stress out your defense. They certainly want to get threes up. Defensively, they are an active help team. And let's see if we can just structurally, we can win the math game a certain way. And then last year, they just ramped up the offensive rebounding to a ridiculous degree. Quick shout out to Nemias Kata, who got an extension like 10 minutes before we started recording. So that part's fun. But this is what we want to do. This is how we want to build this out. Paul George, I am going to take more threes and probably make threes at a higher clip than Jaylen Brown. There is an element of added playmaking that Paul George can provide. Defensively, I think he is just more consistent and just flat out better defensively than Jaylen Brown, even at this stage. Screen navigation is better. Off-ball field is better. While the Boston Celtics were, I think, second in turnover rate offensively, they were 23rd in opponent turnover rate. They did not force a bunch of turnovers. They mostly won the possession battle defensively with what they did on the glass. Paul George is someone that can play the passing lanes and can pick your pocket on top of that. So, like, he can add to that overall formula. And so, again, I don't think the argument should be, is Paul George better than Jaylen Brown? Because I don't think that is the case. Does Paul George's skill set and what he adds to Boston Celtics' overall formula, is that a better fit for the Boston Celtics? I think you can lay out the case. And if he is healthier than he was last year, then I would not be surprised if there isn't like a massive dip in like the regular season production at the very least. I do have some question marks. We'll get there. But I think that is where the bet comes from for the Boston Celtics. And that's before getting into any of like the contract stuff. So like, is that fair to you, Steve? Or how do you kind of soak in the actual player portion of this for these teams?
Well, I'm going to be annoying real quick. In a way that you're not expecting. Yeah. How many years have we done this podcast?
Over five.
How many times have you laid out this case for Paul George on a new team?
Probably every time he's moved teams. He's been very good.
How many times you felt good afterwards?
I'd say most of the time.
Mostly? Okay. I understand the Celtics formula, and I think this, you know, as much as I can rant and rave about trading someone who had that type of season, almost 30 a night, helped you win a lot of games, and it ends with Paul George, it's probably an easier context for Paul George in Boston. We can probably agree on that. The threes are there. Hey, maybe Paul George doesn't have as many drives, but he's going to get them up. He can still self-create, which is still an important piece of what Boston needs. The defense is going to be there. For me, it's just like the last two teams that Paul George were on sure needed a lot of Paul George, and they didn't really get a lot of Paul George. And so that's where I'm like, okay, what are we going to do? I just don't know. Like, I just don't know if it's understood how important Jaylen Brown was to the Boston Celtics. And we can kind of like take our pen and circle, hey, this was this much usage. Boston needed him to soak up a lot of that offensively. And the very thing that you believe in with Boston having Paul George going forward with Jason Tatum back and sliding into a higher role is the very thing people won't give Jaylen Brown credit for last year. That is the irony to me in my head. Your case is based on what Jaylen Brown did last year. Yeah, we can replicate that. Okay, yeah, but why didn't you notice how good it was last year? You sit here and told me all about all these numbers and things. It's interesting. My other concern with Boston specifically, how do you think teams in the East are going to react to Boston after last season? You cannot surprise the NBA twice. You don't get that opportunity. Mm-hmm. You don't get that chance. Who are teams going to game plan for? How are teams going to look to take things away? Who's going to drive the basketball? Can you get the same kind of offensive movement that you had last year? You could say Jaylen Brown did a lot of things to ball things down. I get it. But you're putting all of that weight back on Jason Tatum. Who is he shifting that weight to? Is my question with Boston. Yes, I know they're going to get threes up. Yes, I know they're going to defend. Yes, I know they're going to be good. They're going to be like, this is going to be a good basketball team. I won't say that. How good is it going to be? How much of your ceiling did you just shave off? Because now it's just, hey, like, if we get to playoff time, am I switching everything and we're fine? Or am I just trapping Jason Tatum and doubling him and saying someone else has to be this? Now, to the second part, I'm sure Joe Mazzulla would welcome having advantage basketball consistently. But what doors can they knock on? Like, I'm listening, I'm understanding, I'm willing to get there. But if I'm an opposing coach, absolutely love that you did this, Boston. I'm going to make life as hard as I can on you.
No, I think to that end, and I think the drive piece in particular that you hit on is going to be the important difference between the two. Just looking at it from second spectrum last year, including the regular season, the playoffs, Jaylen Brown over 27 drives per 100 possession. Paul George at 8.6. That is such a drastic shift in styles. They have been pretty much in the bottom three, if not last, in actual rim rate every year. It's been a very consistent theme as they've shifted to more threes. But losing Jaylen Brown and the rim pressure, and even some of the mid-range creation, if you just need half-court counters, that is going to be a major difference. And that's where I think, you know, to what I said a little bit earlier, it's a bet on Paul George fitting what they already want to do and also ramping up the usage for Peyton Pritchard, who, as you've said slash joked about across multiple seasons at this point, anytime someone's out and Peyton Pritchard has to do more, he is more than willing to do more offensively. And I'm not going to go into like super deep numbers diving this front, but like we do have a lot of evidence multiple years when you get into lineups with Tatum and Pritchard without Brown or Pritchard with Brown without Tatum, et cetera. He can soak up number two usage and has done so at a high clip and at an efficient clip as well. To your point, it is a lot different when, okay, this is just the 82 game thing now. You are just officially and consistently higher up on the scouting report now because of the team construct. So like Peyton Pritchard has to continue to prove it. But based on what we've seen so far, I understand why Boston landed on, we actually do think he can do this. It is now just up to him to do it at this point. So I am fascinated to see what that is going to look like. And to your playoff portion, again, they are just going to miss that rim pressure. Like, I don't know how much juice Paul George has in the tank in that area. I think he can replicate some of the mid-range shot making, but how much pressure is he putting on the rim? It certainly puts more of a magnifying glass on Jason Tatum, as he should be further away from the injury, hopefully healthier. We have seen what it looks like when your drives hit and the attention that you draw. Can you become a guy that's getting 20 drives per 100 possessions while doing everything else? I think from a talent perspective, he probably can, but will he consistently do that? That's going to be an important question for the Boston Celtics.
No, well, I think it's an intriguing thing. And like, I feel like I'm all over the place, but I'm trying to understand, how do I get to where this makes sense for Boston, even if I don't understand why they did it, right? You're betting on internal development. You're betting on the people that you have in that locker room getting better. You're betting on Jason Tatum coming back at full strength. You're betting on Derek White being able to impact the game. You're betting on Peyton Pritchard being able to do things. Peyton Pritchard scored 15 points or less in what? 6 out of 7 games in that series. Like it's the one thing that intrigues me is everyone's like, well, Paul George played really well in that first round series, but they never talk about what happened in the next series for the Philadelphia 76ers. I'm intrigued by that portion, but this is what happens when you have a certain style of play. You understand what you can do. Jason Tatum, his playmaking has continued to improve, but now it's going to have to be at a top tier to where he's going to have to score a lot of points. He's going to have to make a lot of plays. Everyone's going to have to rally behind him. The defense has to be really good. Like, there's a specific set of things that have to happen for this team to do well. And I think that puts you in a box in the Eastern Conference where a whole lot of teams gotten better. And so I'm fascinated to see how Boston tries to make things work. The thing for me, and I'm going to shift it to the Philadelphia 76ers, what a win if you're Philadelphia, right? We got Jaylen Brown. I didn't think Paul George was going to get traded, not because Philadelphia didn't want to move him. I just didn't think it would happen. And like, our ability to trade Paul George turned into Jaylen Brown. And so from the Sixers perspective, we saw Philadelphia shift to more drive and kick, to have a different type of base, right, Nikias, in the moments where Joel Embiid was A, on the bench, or B, flat out not available. We saw Tyrese Maxey get a boost from that in a big way. We saw VJ Edgecombe fit right in and grow within that. We saw them find a level of flow. Didn't take them as far as they wanted to go, but it sure was better than we expected. This team just added Jaylen Brown, who averaged the second most drives per game in the NBA last year. I think there is a fit here if you're Philadelphia. We saw the pressure and the growth from Tyrese Maxey as far as what he did to defenses. More teams were working to show early help against him when he went one-on-one, when he was in pick and roll. They were at the nail, trying to just take him, turning the corner away. The Celtics themselves were selling out to take Tyrese Maxey away. Now you mean to tell me Jaylen Brown's a part of that? So the things that Philadelphia can run, like I think it's easy to copy and paste usage and say Tyrese Maxey sure needs the ball. Joel Embiid sure needs the ball. Jaylen Brown sure needs the ball. How's that going to work? I don't think that's how you operate, right? We saw the blend last year for Philadelphia with what they had built as far as, we're going to try and move things around. We're going to empower our guards to make plays. We may not have it every night, but we're going to try and get downhill. And then you add Joel Embiid to that when he was healthy. And, oh, that's a guy we have to consider in the post. Are we going to double him? Are we going to send help? How are we going to figure out him on the pick and pop? So you mean to tell me you throw the ball into Joel Embiid in the post and it's Jaylen Brown, VJ Edgecombe, and Tyrese Maxey, 1, 2, 3 passes away? What's your decision making? Because all those guys are going to be able to, one, make shots, two, be willing to take shots, and three, they can drive. So there is a way that you can kind of shift things. And the hidden talent of this, right? If you want to say, oh, I don't know how many shots they're going to get, and they got Anthony Simons too. But hey, we're going to find a way to have balanced lineups throughout. So if you're worried about, hey, can Jaylen Brown get his looks? Yeah. Start second quarter, start fourth quarter. Look at those lineups they can put out there now. Look at the offense they can generate now. You got Jaylen Brown, who had to do that for Boston for an entire season. Hey, can you give us 4 minutes with this second unit lineup? Go to work real quick.
Yes, I can.
Tyrese Maxey had to play how many minutes a game last year? VJ had to play how many minutes a game last year? Let's shift that a little bit so we can kind of put ourselves in a different position and have different anchors. If Jaylen Brown has it going, if Tyrese Maxey has it going, if Joel Embiid has it going, you can now go with guard screens, inverted pick and roll with Maxey screening for Jaylen Brown. That's That's interesting. How do you want to guard that? BJ Adeshikun is a screener. How do you want to guard that? So I just think Philadelphia has now been able to kind of double down on what they found last year and got a better player to do it. Why did you hand them that? I'm confused.
Understood. Like, the thing I was going to say, and I won't hang here too long because you nailed it on the Jaylen Brown portion, is that if nothing else, like, there's just a general higher floor because he has been more available than Paul George, et cetera. And because he's been so available, you feel a little bit better about if we have to manage Joel Embiid at all, or if Tyrese Maxey has an ankle tweak at any point. We do just now have a guy that you can be the guy that absorbs a bunch of usage for us offensively and keeps us going. Like, you mentioned the in-game stuff and the staggering that Philly can get into when they're at full scale. Even if they're not, you just have another guy. I think last year, Embiid goes down. It's like, okay, we are shifting to Maxey plus BJ. We're playing faster. When Maxey goes to the bench, what is this about to look like? Now you just have another buffer. And I think that just helps so much in regular season basketball. And when you get into a playoff context, as you mentioned, the wave that you can get into, Maxey can just go with high early draft screens, get downhill. You send a bunch of help. It's Jaylen Brown playing off of a closeout. What are you prepared to do about that portion of the program? Like, it's going to be a lot of fun for Philadelphia on that front. I guess for me, I am curious to see, like, what the partnerships are going to look like. I think you already nailed the, like, Maxey screening for Paul, for Jaylen Brown portion of the program. I think that's going to be fun. I think VJ, to a lesser degree, but you can get some juice out of that. If nothing else, you'll probably get smaller defenders on VJ than you'll have on Jaylen Brown. That allows him to get some mismatches, put his head down even more, get to the free throw line. I guess that's the thing I add in half jokingly. Boy, Philly's going to get to the line a bunch next year. Maxey got better at foul drawing. Joel Embiid draws a bunch of fouls. Jaylen Brown gets downhill. Those Sixer games are going to be long. You're not going to have a good time dealing with them. I do wonder what the Jaylen Brown, Joel Embiid partnership is going to look like when they're in action together. Because I think you nailed it. If Embiid's getting double teams, that's just an easier context for Jaylen Brown. And because Jason Tatum was out, he didn't get the same volume of playing off of someone else getting two. So I am, you know, if we're talking about efficiency stuff with Jaylen Brown, it should help for him to be back in that kind of context. We're just playing off of that. But, like, what do their pick and rolls look like? It's something that I am curious about. Are those going to be, like, drop to late switches? Are you putting two on the ball at all against Jaylen Brown? Are you just ducking under Jaylen Brown? Because he is someone that can knock down threes, but he hasn't consistently been a knockdown three-point shooter. Is that something that teams are like, okay, we can probably live with some unders, and if Jaylen Brown's taking this shot, then maybe we're okay. I am fascinated by that piece. And then to the defensive end, the on-ball juice is going to be there. You are going to need more off-ball consistency from Jaylen Brown than we have generally gotten from him. And I think within this Philadelphia context, especially if we don't know how healthy Joel Embiid is going to be throughout the course of a season or a playoff series, you are just going to need a higher level of consistency there. So does him kind of scaling down to number two option or maybe number three option sometimes with Maxey and Embiid, does that allow him to give more attention to on the defensive end and more juice on that defensive end? I think it's plausible, but we do have to see it to make that work. But I think this is a higher floor group at bare minimum. And in a playoff setting, they're just going to be incredibly annoying to deal with.
Absolutely. You nailed it. Who else should we talk about in the Eastern Conference, guys?
I want to ask you a quick question before we officially move off of this one.
Oh.
No, you're good. Just to the free agency portion since we're here. You mentioned Dean Wade now in Philly. Anthony Simons now in Philly. And for Boston, Mitchell Robinson joined the program. Mike Conley also going to Boston. Just a general, how do you feel about the free agency additions to these teams as they made this big trade swing?
How do I feel about the free agency swings? Well, I mean, I wanted to ask you how you felt because you decided to talk about possession maxing. I don't know what that means. But Mitchell Robinson gets rebounds and Boston likes the possession battle, so that's good. I mean, if you're Boston, you double down. Like, you have Nemias Keita, you have Mitchell Robinson. You feel pretty good about your bigs that you have 48 minutes on the floor. Look at this. If you're on YouTube, look at this. Woo, possession maxing stock up, up, up. What was wrong with you, Nikias Duncan? But I think Boston, again, you have defense. You have a roller. You understand we can kind of continue to do what we want to do. So I understand what Boston did as far as just building their team out. I believe in that formula to a degree. Philadelphia, Anthony Simons looking at Philadelphia, seeing what Tyrese Maxey and Anthony Simons did and said, yes, I would like a piece of that. Sure, we can make it a player option. I'm trying to hoop. makes sense. Makes sense to me because, yeah, I let me go ahead and get some buckets in Philadelphia. And I think because we saw what campaign in this context be like, yeah, I feel really good here. Yeah, I think Anthony Simons will help them in different lineups as far as being able to put the ball in the basket. And so Philadelphia being able to add more talent to their philosophy is important going forward. And I think Dean Wade is a key glue piece because I think he can play with almost everyone on that roster without having a level of pressure to where I have to perform, I have to do X, Y, and Z. I can defend whoever you want. I can move the ball. I can make smart plays. We can kind of have ourselves in a good environment. So I think Philadelphia is just kind of invigorated to a degree. And I think the Hook Porty move is low-key like, okay, we're just going to have more bigs that can do certain things in our roster. So I like what Philly did.
Okay.
Also, like you know what? Very quick, before we move on, salute to Mike Conley being a Boston Celtic. Veteran leadership, Michael.
That is very sure to answer my old question. I tweeted out like Dean Wade was my favorite signing of like the early cycle. We've had a lot of moves and trades since then. Phone is like, ooh, you hurt Cleveland from getting them out of there. But to your point, forward with legit size that I can defend wings, I can defend fours, as we've seen with some of the cross-matching Cleveland tapped into, put him on a point guard so we can just switch your pick and rolls if you need that. He's going to have to knock down corner threes, but the cutting's going to be there. The offensive rebound is going to be there. There's just some real two-way impact that he can provide to this group. And what we've talked about with Philly over the last 2 years is like, hey, who exactly is your four? Do you have other options so you don't have to be pigeonholed into being small? Do you have something else? Dean Wade should help you on that front. And I'm right there with you with Anthony Simons. That's a fun context for him. To the possession maxing portion, Steve, Boston Celtics kill you on the offensive glass. We limit our turnovers. Mitchell Robinson is going to kill you on the offensive glass. Nemeas Kata got the four-year extension. He's going to continue to kill you on the offensive glass. They should both help on the defensive glass. Bad start of the year. Ended up being, I think, sixth in defensive rebound rate last year. Hey, man, Paul George, I think the Sixers had a turnover rate about 3 percentage points lower when he was on the floor last year. And again, he forces turnovers with the way he plays the passing lanes. This is what possession maxing is. We're going to make sure we get up more shots than you. You're not going to have a good time. And so I applaud the Boston Celtics for doing what they needed to do to add to that formula. Now, the Jaylen Brown trade was the most recent move. I would argue the biggest move, and one of the more surprising ones, is Kawhi Leonard going back to the Toronto Raptors. He's heading back. Brandon Ingram, Grady Dick, a 31 first, a 33 first, a 27 first pick swap, a 2030 second, and a 2033 second going to the Los Angeles Clippers. What do you mean Kawhi Leonard is back all these years later? Won a championship, left, and now he's back. What's up?
I told you, always spin the block.
I don't think that's the answer. I don't know if that's the answer, Steve. I'm not going to hold you. But the Toronto Raptors agree more with you than they do with me at the very least. And so now you are adding Kawhi Leonard to a Raptors group that, to remind the people out there that did not watch games, the Raptors were a top six seed. The Raptors were a top 10 defense. And now they're adding someone who, for large stretches of last season, just performed like a top five player in Kawhi Leonard. He is coming off of the best offensive season of his career. And in key moments can ramp things up defensively. I do not think on a per possession basis he is like at all defense level for me. But when he locks in, he is still terrifying to dribble against. He is still terrible to pass the ball around. Him plus Scottie Barnes plus Colin Murray Boyles, that is the stuff that dreams are made of. You're talking 3 through 5. And that defense was already really good. In this context, Scottie can just take on the tougher on-ball stuff. Kawhi can just kind of roam around. And Colin Murray-Boyles can guard whoever you ask him to. That's going to be a lot of fun for me. This Raptors team is already projected to be good, in my opinion, especially if they're going to be some semblance of healthy. You add Kawhi to this mix to upgrade on Brandon Ingram, all due respect. This is a team that can come out of the East, depending on what the rest of this offseason looks like. I'll put it there. I'll swing the ball to you. How do you feel about Kawhi Leonard in Toronto?
Well, I mean, Toronto found a formula that you laid out all season long to be able to compete at a high level, and they added Kawhi Leonard to that. and this is not a knock on Brandon Ingram, who I think is very talented, and I think was a big reason why Toronto was able to sustain success. The playoffs could have gone better for him, but that is now Kawhi Leonard in that slot. And his, like, Kawhi's ability to self-create and get buckets is going to be important, but you got a whole ecosystem around Kawhi this time around. And so, like, health is primary. Like, you want him to be able to perform consistently. There's just more room for him to be Kawhi in a defensive setting where that team can elevate, in a conference where it feels a little bit better. Feels like a move for the playoffs. We raise our ceiling. We raise our floor. We get to work. And so, yes, I would like to see Kawhi Leonard and Scotty Barnes and Colin Murray-Boyles play defense at the same time. But you have to deal with Toronto in a different fashion. Scotty Barnes' growth has been intriguing. As good as Brandon Ingram was, how much attention was he going to get from defenses? Kawhi Leonard will demand that to a degree. Mm-hmm. So we are going to be able to have offensive movement. We're going to be able to have someone who's going to get double teams and teams that want to show help and not don't feel comfortable with you operating one-on-one. And we're going to have a defensive base. So that's a team that is now laying, like, the foundation, pouring more on top of it and saying, what are you going to do with what we have to offer? And so this feels like the payoff for Darko, who has built this up to a degree to get the most out of this team. And now we have a superstar talent that we're adding to this that feels underrated. And so I'm intrigued to see how Toronto fully pulls it together. But a lot of the question marks we have with Toronto can be answered by Kawhi Leonard, even if the availability isn't 82, because he can be a 16-game player in a different way.
Yeah, like, I think it's easy to draw the parallel of let's add Kawhi to a team that's already good and then he elevates us. Like, I don't think this current Raptors roster is exactly what it was like heading into the 2018-19 season. So it's not the same infrastructure. But I think you can still get to a lot of Scotty Barnes is very good. RJ Barrett was pretty important for them with this mix of drives. And we do just have a formula that can make us competitive every night. And now once we get into the 16-game portion, hey, we got a guy that is just better than Brandon Ingram, which I would say, to your point, like, he did have a good season last year in Toronto. Ultimately, he was an all-star. And in the playoffs, like, didn't perform, but also very clearly was not healthy during that run. And we got more reporting as the series went on, like, oh, he was playing through a lot. And that helps explain why some of the playoff production looked the way that it did. So I am intrigued. We're going to shift to the Clippers section shortly, but I am intrigued to see what healthier Brandon Ingram looks like, especially alongside, like, a table setter like Darius Garland. Like, I think that can be a lot of fun for him. But who, boy, this Raptors group. Like, I hate to over-index on the defense, but that is so much collective size. And there's just a lot of range on that defensive group. Like, they can just poke at different things. Be a switch group, be a ramp-up group. I'm curious to see, especially with Kawhi in tow, like, better defender than Brandon Ingram. But, like, the Raptors started the season, we are being full-court pressure team all of the time. And it took them, like, a week and a half to, like, okay, maybe we can't do it that much. Let's be a little bit more timely with this, because we're kind of getting diced up. I do wonder what that split is going to be with Kawhi on the court. Because ramped up version, that seems terrifying, but also you do want to preserve him at least a little bit during the regular season. So what is that piece going to look like? I think looking at the rest of the roster, this does put more of a spotlight on, like, how much can RJ Barrett replicate from last year? How healthy is Emmanuel Quickley going to be? And what kind of season do we get from him? I think having Kawhi Leonard as a more natural number one option, it should slot Emmanuel Quickley into even more of an off-ball, I play off at advantages type of role offensively. And that should help him, because his shooting is going to be pretty important to this group overall. And so curious to see how they build out the rest of the bench. Quick shout out to Kyle Anderson, who is in Toronto, a former teammate of Kawhi Leonard back in San Antonio. So that should be a lot of fun there. A nice depth piece at the four. So they're just going to continue to have a bunch of size and switchability in the front court. Jamal Shedd is back. Elijah Martin got a new contract, so they do just have the guards that could just be dogs on the defensive end on top of that to add to that formula. Intriguing group, Steve. Need to add some shooting, but intriguing group nonetheless. To the Clippers portion, how do you feel about the Brandon Ingram / Grady Dick fit in Los Angeles?
Do you remember when the Clippers had, like, the gap years in between Lob City and...
The hair quotes are killing me.
That in crazy. The Kawhi era, and it was like, what was it? It was Patrick Beverly, Avery Bradley, Danilo Gallinari, Marcin Gortat and Tobias Harris. And it's like, hey, this team shouldn't be that good. And it's like, hey, they keep winning. I don't know if this Clipper group is going to hit the heights of that one. But like, you got Darius Garland. You got Brandon Ingram. You got Bennedict Mathurin. You got Brook Lopez. Like, you got pieces. Can you find enough to elevate everyone at the same time? You got Keaton Wagler. Like, can you do enough things in the Clippers context of we need to defend at a certain level? We have people who can do things offensively. Can we just get an identity out of what we have? I am intrigued by that part of it. And I feel like the Clippers somehow, some way, find a way to pivot more than any team has in the last 10, 15 years, where you think they aren't going to do something and say, well, we're still here. So I'm intrigued. Darius Garland played well for them, is going to have a lot of opportunity. Brandon Ingram, say what you want, bucket getter. So they have pieces to where, okay, we can have guys with a specific lane play a specific role, and if we get enough defense around that, you're not going to enjoy playing us. We might not beat you, but it's not going to be a good time for you. So I think it's a different era for the Clippers. It's probably not the one they expected, considering the championship goals they had, is the word I'll use. But how do you kind of find a way to pivot around that? And what's that mean in this Western Conference? The Eastern Conference is fun. I'm glad everyone's joining in, but the Western Conference is still just a fight. So can you do enough to establish a rhythm and identity that will carry you on to have regular season success? That's where I'm intrigued.
Okay. Can I ask you a half court related free throw?
Yeah. What's up?
Are the Clippers going to lead the league in staggers next year?
I would assume they would probably lead the league in like double drag more than staggers.
Okay, because I'm just thinking about Brandon Ingram starts in the corner, comes off two, catches that top of the key, what you got. Bennedict Mathurin start from the corner, curls off the second screen, gets downhill. Brandon Ingram brings the ball up. Darius Garland starts in the corner, gets two. Maybe they flow into like get action or something off of that. Then it's pick and roll time. It just feels like that is a very easy setup. And I guess I'll quickly say, assuming that Bennedict Mathurin is back, because he is a restricted free agent, there has not been a lot of conversation about what potential extension numbers are going to look like. Now, I do not have sources, so that doesn't have to mean anything, but it's just like you would think you would hear they're close, they're far apart, these are our plans. Just haven't heard much of anything on the Mathurin front, so I just keep an eye on that at the very least. But assuming they are back, to your earlier point about them being able to pivot, obviously they didn't want the era to end like this, to where Paul George goes first and you make the Harden bet, but it ultimately, you know, does not get to where you want it to get to. And now Kawhi's gone, et cetera. But for them to be able to your point, a few years ago, okay, we have a solid team. We build something that is enticing. We make a swing. Okay, that didn't work. Let's reconfigure something within the core. Okay, that didn't work. Let's do it again. Okay, that didn't work. Let's pivot again. And that pivot is now Darius Garland, top five pick, Brandon Ingram. However you feel about Bennedict Mathurin, can get buckets. The other areas of basketball, we will leave that alone for right now. And then we also just have young, intriguing players on top of that. It's like, oh, even if they're not playoff good, they're going to be annoying to play against. And like, I'm curious what the start lineup's going to be. Cause like Chris Dunn got his contract guaranteed. He was one of the best guard defenders in basketball last year. If you run out Chris Dunn, Darius Garland, Brandon Ingram, insert four here, hey, that could get fun. And I do also wonder like what Grady Dick is going to look like in this context, because it's been such a weird start to his career where he comes in and the calling card for him is shooting. And it felt like the defense kind of was what it was, but offense was like, oh, he can put the ball on the floor a little bit better than you think. Oh, he can pass the ball a little bit better than you think. Surely he's doing the three-point shooting. Not quite. And so, like, I wonder if in this Clippers context, I made the stagger question or whatever, but in this Clippers context, does he knock down enough shots to unlock the ancillary skills that he has? Because if so, that ends up being, like, a pretty stealthy get for the Clippers, I think.
Well, I think this is where opportunity fit in context are important, and how much more comfortable is Grady Dick in the Clippers context than in Toronto, where there was an expectation and a need, we need you to do X, Y, and Z. The Clippers may still need him to do X, Y, and Z. It won't feel the same. I hope that makes sense, right? But he'll have more room to attack. He'll have more room to shoot. He'll have less pressure because in Toronto, hey, why are you not making shots? Hey, why are you not guarding at a certain level? Hey, why are you, you have to do these certain things.
You are
our shooter. We need that in LA. Like, it's okay. Go ahead. You have room to do X, Y, and Z. So does that growth kind of pay off? That's always the interesting thing with like a young prospect who changes teams. You get drafted to a team for a specific reason. Another team takes your talent bet and says, you know what? Go ahead and cook. Let's see what it works. Mm-hmm. How much do you have in the tank? So it could be an area where I am now relieved of having to do these things. I can go out there and hoop.
Mm-hmm. No, I like that. I like that. Now, also add quickly on the Clippers front, before we shift to the other team in LA, quick shout out to Kobe Sanders, getting himself a 4-year deal based on the rookie campaign that he had last season, shot the leather off the ball, defended lots of different types of players. Just a fun year for him. Happy for him. I am intrigued by what this Clippers team is going to look like next year. Now, Steve, as we go across the street, we take an Uber, whatever the case may be. The Los Angeles Lakers and the Utah Jazz agreed to quite a deal. And then tied to that, the Lakers made a lot of signings. But to the trade portion, Steve, Walker Kessler, you are a member of the Los Angeles Lakers. You also get a 4-year, $130 million contract with a player option on that fourth year. And to do that, the Los Angeles Lakers traded an unprotected 2031 first-round pick, an unprotected 2033 first round pick, swap rights in 2028, swap rights in 2030. Not only is that quite the pick haul, I think that is quite literally the pick haul for the Los Angeles Lakers to pull that off. So before we get to the free agency signings, how did you feel about the package for Walker Kessler? And how do you feel about Walker Kessler's fit in Los Angeles?
Oh, it's the lights. You're blinded by the action. You need that Hollywood. I was intrigued by the amount of picks, but you want someone, you go out there and get them, it's done. The Walker Kessler domino felt like the first, hey, yeah, we're going to swing to make this a Luka Doncic team. And Walker Kessler, it's going to be very interesting. He felt like the first domino. You get a big who can roll. You get a big who can rim protect. You get a big who can defend. Here's Walker Kessler. Now let's set the rest off. The fit feels like it's there. I do have questions, but pick and roll is going to be there. We know that he can screen, he can roll, he can finish. We know that he can operate the dunker spot. We've seen him spaced out on the court and running secondary action. So there's different things you can do with Walker Kessler offensively. We've seen him at the elbow running different actions in Utah. So like, there's a fit with what the Lakers would like to do philosophically. With the personnel they have, that's good. We know the defense, he should help. He's a rim protector, really good in drop, really good as far as just contesting and blocking shots in the paint. We understand that. Walker Kessler, fine at that. The question now becomes, do you have the screen navigators to like accentuate or highlight what Walker Kessler does defensively at his best? Lakers have not really wanted to put two on the ball. So if you get a big who is able to detract that and you keep the ball in front, that's a plus for you. Are you going to be able to contain dribble penetration outside of pick and roll? Are you going to allow Walker Kessler to protect the rim, or is he going to be forced to help up? Is he going to be forced to step up and help? And you're in different positions where, yes, we have a rim protector, but we're still getting beat off the bounce and we don't have the same level of defense. How many defensive things are you willing to try with Walker Kessler? Are you going to want to put him at the level? Are you going to want to have him trap? Are you going to have him want like late switch or switch in general? How much versatility can you bake in? I think that's the idea for me. I understand how he helps Luka. I understand how he works with Austin Reeves. I understand what he can do defensively. How much do you kind of surround that in bubble wrap to get the most out of this quote-unquote trio? Is where my head kind of lands. Am I off?
No, I don't think you're off at all. I think all of that is, I think, I guess we can start with the defense, because I think you nailed it, what the strengths are for him. You put him in a drop. You try to get to the rim against him. You're not going to have a good time. Like, looking at the numbers in Utah, watching the film in Utah, but also looking at the numbers in Utah, not only did they didn't have much success when trying to shoot against Walker Kessler at the rim, they also just took a lower share of their shots at the rim when Walker Kessler was on the floor, in part because he is just a massive presence down there. You don't really want to deal with that. And so the Lakers are obviously hoping that you can replicate the deterrence in addition to just the actual rim protection that he provides. Like, he's just going to get you two blocks a game. This is what he does. The experimental portion is where I'm intrigued, because in Utah, they did ask him to switch a good bit, going back to the 24-25 season. Before he got injured last year, you know, turn on that opening Clippers game, and he is just at the level all the time. Sometimes just at the level and containing and dropping back. Sometimes it's just a full-fledged head. Sometimes we mix in a trap. Like, there was elements of, like, we do want to just do different things with you. Did he nail all of that? He did not. But it is intriguing to me that he has at least been asked to do everything. Like, I would be a little bit more worried about the translation and some of the experimentation that JJ may want to do if he was just solely drop big. This is the only thing we're going to ask you to do. And if we need to do something else, we're bringing in another big. The fact that there was a level of, okay, switch. Let's see what you got. Get to the level. Let's see what you got. I think it makes it easier for JJ and the Lakers overall to say, okay, we can bake in some of these, to your point, let's mix in some of the late switches. So it may not just be pure switch everything, though the Lakers have been one of the switchiest teams of basketball since JJ's been there, but we have a comfort of mixing in late switches at the very least. You talked quite a bit about, and did so well, to be clear, but you talked quite a bit about the weird hybrid zone that the Lakers went to last year, and JJ ramping up the zone usage to a degree that he certainly didn't do in year one. Does that feel like more of a compliment to what the Lakers do, more than this is kind of how we have to defend if we're going to be successful and then be at a level to where the offense pops? Walker gives you, I think he just gives you a higher floor defensively with what he provides. And because he has the experience doing other things, there may be a little bit more in the toolkit that JJ is willing to experiment with. And the hope there is, obviously, if the Lakers can become a top 10 defense, you take that and you give JJ coach of the year. But if nothing else, can we get to like 13th? This year and like defend at the ninth best level when Walker's on the floor? Like, I don't think that is out of the question if he's able to hit the notes and stay on the floor. Offense, I am curious to see what the roles are going to look like, because he can finish. It just takes him a little bit to get there. So like the Lakers, the Sixers, the Celtics, they're among three of the top four or five teams in terms of how high on average their pick and rolls are. Are these just going to become like lower pick and rolls for Walker Kessler to get more juice out of that? And if so, what does that do for the Luka drives, the Austin Reeves drives? I'm curious about that piece, but this should be a helpful partnership. You already mentioned the playmaking piece, so I'm not going to hang there too long. To these free agency signings, Steve.
Oh boy, you wrote a piece about it. Go to Yahoo and read what Nakai said about this team. That's another $12. Send me my check.
I now owe Steve $24. Don't ask where the first one came from. But I did write about the ceiling. And like, my overarching theme was I like all of these signings individually. I am curious about how it fits collectively. And then the broaden things all the way out. We still have an entire offseason to go, so the Lakers can make more moves, make more signings. But does this do enough to push them into like tier one contention? I don't think it puts them into tier one contention yet, but I do like Walker there. It is a hefty price when you consider the picks and what that means for their maneuverability moving forward, but I do think he helps them on both ends of the floor. Steve, as you know, I am a huge Sandro Mamukelashvili fan, huge Mamu fan. And I think, not even I think, for I would imagine, JJ wants to add a little bit more movement to the half-court offense so it isn't just Luka pick and roll, Austin Reeves pick and roll. For a guy like Mamu inserted into the offense to where I can just initiate some of your offense for you. I can get to the elbow. You can fly around me. I can just do some of the delay stuff and go side to side. If I grab a defensive rebound, I can lead the break and we can flow into stuff from there. He should add some juice to this offense. And where he isn't a great defender by any stretch, there was some at-the-level goodness with him in Toronto. And now this year, we're going to find out how much of that is you are playing alongside under good defenders, especially when you're looking at some of those hybrid second units with him plus Scotty. How much of it was the Toronto context, and how much of that is him actually getting better defensively? We're going to learn a lot this year in this context, but he should help the offense. Colin Sexton should certainly help with drives, spot up shooting. He's got to be more willing to take threes, but can knock down spot up shots. I'm fascinated by what this piece is going to look like. Steve, how do you feel about the free agency additions for the Los Angeles Lakers?
I mean, when they kept rolling in, I was like, oh, the Lakers really swung to make this like a Luka-type team. And not to like copy and paste or compare to a Dallas team, but just structurally, right? We have bigs who can roll and are skilled. We have a lot of players who can play different positions but can space the floor. We're adding shooting. We're adding people who can drive closeouts. And we're doing that around the hub of Luka Doncic being able to kind of have different coverages. And hey, if you're going to put two on the ball, because I've made all these shots, I can make these plays. I have Austin Reeves right next to me, so he can be a primary when I'm on the bench. Austin Reeves can cook, and we can kind of have a continuity. If both of them are on the bench for whatever reason, we can get to movement. Like, we just have talent in the room. And so I kind of understood the assignment where, okay, they pivoted to get these type of players in the building. All of them are going to have to perform at a certain level. And so Austin Reeves, that playmaking growth was fantastic last year. The scoring was consistent last year. You have to do it this year. There's no other option. There's no looking behind you. You got to perform at a high level. Luka, you want your MVP? This is your year to go get it. Mm-hmm. Quentin Grimes, hey, was George Niang right or was George Niang wrong? Are you ready to go ahead and get these buckets? And what are you going to do? Colin Sexton, hey, we know that he is going to get after it on both ends of the floor, but we know he's going to score the basketball. He's done that consistently for a few years, whether we respect the teams that he's been on or not. So we have more of, like, I respect the Lakers for leaning into, all right, we have Luka Doncic. Let's accentuate that. But let's try and double down and get as versatile as we can offensively. And then defensively, they're going to figure this out. That wasn't different, though. Like, that was always the question. It's just you had LeBron James as well. They're going to have to figure out this defensively, and it's tough in this Western Conference. So they're going to have to find who can guard together, how much do we want to switch, are we keeping the ball in front? Because you're going to put some lineups out there that are going to accentuate your offense. But if your defense is not at a certain level, what does that look like? That's going to be the battle, I feel like, for the Lakers going forward. I feel like I would trust the offense. But defensively, do you have enough of a team defense mentality to find effort-based coverages or a recovery? Or can you defend well enough as a team to like make that make more sense? That's the battle they have to do. Or else it's going to be running point.
You know what? I had Lakers thoughts. I'm just going to leave that there. That's a fantastic send-off. The reason, as you alluded to, Steve, unbelievable. The Lakers do not have LeBron James anymore. We know that he will no longer be a member of the team. Where would you like to see LeBron? Not even a prediction. What spot would make you feel happiest as a basketball fan / basketball analyst?
Oh, my camera's still on? Wherever he's happy.
Okay. That's it. Running point into whatever you want is fire from Steve. That's unbelievable. I think for me, I will let you off the hook. I think for me, it's clear that the top three in some capacity seems to be a Cleveland return, a Miami return. I'm playing with Steph and Draymond in Golden State. If I had to predict, I feel like this is just going to end up being Golden State for him. But boy, Dean Wade out of the building in Cleveland, that does kind of free up the four. And obviously, you've had the return in the championship in Cleveland before. Like, it does kind of make sense to start your career in Cleveland. You have the middle stint in Cleveland and then just end it in Cleveland. I think Golden State, Cleveland, probably like the top two if I'm doing like predictions. If you're talking about where I'd like to see him, though, tell you what, him in Minnesota would be fascinating. And I think LeBron in San Antonio would also be fascinating. Those are probably the top two on the intrigue list for me. I don't think he's going to choose either of those two. But that's top two on the intrigue list for me, at the very least.
Okay.
So there we go.
To my happiness point, I was laying something out.
Okay.
Does LeBron James want to deal with Rudy Gobert? Can I be ignorant for 35 seconds, right?
Sure, go ahead.
Does LeBron James want to deal with Rudy Gobert? No. Does LeBron James want to deal with Does LeBron James want to deal with Draymond Green at this stage? Not really. Does LeBron James want to deal with James Harden right now? I don't know. I think LeBron goes back to Miami.
Okay. Would also be a fascinating group. I guess it would kind of have to be point LeBron on offense, and then defensively, Davion, you got those guards. And then you just figure it out with a whole bunch of collective size 3 through 5. Like, you can map out the pathway.
That's a selfish pick for me, because I would like to watch LeBron, Giannis, and Bam all on the weak side, being like, I dare you to do something.
Yeah, you try to take on Pella Larson if you want to. He's a good defender. You try if you want to. If you do, by some chance, beat him, we will jump you. All three come outside. We will absolutely jump you. Okay. Quickly, on to some other transactions before we move to the W side. Last trade, Santi Aldama, you are a Dallas Maverick, which I'm just kind of keeping my eyes on the Mavericks this offseason in general, because I feel like they have a lot of pathways to both improve the roster. I don't know what's going to happen with PJ Washington. I don't know what's going to happen with Daniel Gafford. Like, they could just be in some trades here moving forward. I am kind of intrigued by the Santi Aldama addition, assuming that he stays on the roster. Another 4 that can play make a little bit, that can knock down some shots for you. The defense kind of is what it is, but based on the infrastructure being built in Dallas, I think you can insulate him. I'm fascinated by the Santi Aldama piece. Now, I will concede the floor if you want to add anything on the Santi piece or anything on this trade, but I can move forward if you do not want to talk about it.
Very quickly, Masai reintegrating Vision 6-9 South is funny.
Okay. Hey, listen, fair enough. We want skilled size on this side. So I understand it. I understand it. Okay, to some free agency signings, Steve. San Antonio Spurs bring back Julian Champagne on a 3-year, $40 million deal. Harrison Barnes also back. Tobias Harris, now a member of the San Antonio Spurs. So two-part question for you, Steve. How do you feel about Tobias in San Antonio? Is he starting at the 4?
No, I don't think he starts, but I think he helps. Okay. Like, obviously, they could pivot. It's understandable, but you have an established foundation of what you want to do. And I think Tobias Harris, what he did for Detroit, with Detroit having a foundation of defense and then him elevating his game in the playoffs, I just think, one, he's going to fit into what the Spurs want to do defensively. 2, he can self-create. 3, he can help their lineup versatility. And I think the Spurs got to a point where, okay, if we're not playing Harrison Barnes, we now have to play these specific lineups. I think Tobias helps grease the wheels a little bit to where we can have a little bit more skilled size. We can have someone who can defend 4s and 5s and switch and play next to Wimby. So I like that move for them.
Okay. I do love that. I kind of exited that first season. Like, they could use a little bit more juice at the 4. And it's like, well, hey, entering next season, we can play Tobias at the 4. We can play Julian Champagne at the 4. If we dust Harrison Barnes back off, we can play him at the 4. We can go to Keldon Johnson at the 4. If we go smaller, we can go Carter Bryant at the 4. They're at the very least giving themselves some options. we going to have something. We're going to have some buttons to press on the 4. So I'm fascinated. Quickly to the Lakers sports you mentioned, like, hey, they need to figure out the defense. Sure, it would be nice if Marcus Smart was still in the room for the Los Angeles Lakers. However, he is going to be a member of the Houston Rockets. Marcus Smart going to Houston, 2-year, $13 million deal. Bogdan Bogdanovic, a 1-year deal in Houston. Tari Eason is back while also dropping, I guess, bruh, on Twitter. I don't know what that means in relation to the contract. As someone that also uses Twitter for, like, real life things and also basketball, he could have been reacting to something entirely different. But that announcement and that tweet was just funny and just interesting time. But the Houston Rockets, how do you feel about Marcus Smart and Bogdan in Houston?
Love the Marcus Smart fit to a degree, because he's exactly what Ime would want. He's going to get after it. And I would like to see him and Amen Thompson and Kevin Durant defend actions with Jabari's effort. Like, I think that's going to, like, you can turn some water off in Houston. I'm intrigued. I think Bogdan, it's a good swing. Because I think Bogdan eventually will have more in the tank than he had in Clipperland. And so if he's able to kind of nail that and be like, yep, I can get buckets again, don't worry about it, that's an interesting piece to add to a Houston team. That adds to their lineup versatility. So I'm intrigued by that.
Oh, like it's going to be health related. Like I think Marcus Smart is going to add to that defense that Houston already brings. I think the playmaking is going to be helpful. You always keep an eye on not just the 3-point shooting, but when he decides to take them. But I think that consistent aggression Ime is going to enjoy. Bogdan, I always worry about the health with him. But for a half court offense in Houston that had me tilting my head at various portions of last season, if Bogdan is healthy, he should at least help some of those second units. So I'm right there with you on that front. Trying to think, bouncing around, like no Tobias Harris in Detroit anymore, but they replaced him with John Collins. Do you like the John Collins fit in Detroit?
I am. This is very much a, can he do the specific things that JB Bickerstaff will ask him to do? I think JB gets the most out of players, but he's going to have to nail the defense. And hopefully his presence will unlock someone as a roller. People will point to him, but if that means Asar becomes a roller, I'm fine with it. Just make shots, find a way to contribute defensively, and impact the game. But he's going to have to do very specific things in this Pistons context to elevate them. And I'm intrigued to see how they get there. Because if teams want to switch, it's the same thing I've always said. They want to switch against John Collins, and the lob threat's gone, and now he's spaced, and now we're doing the same thing we've done for the last 3 years. I feel like I've laid the case out for John Collins for 5 years, and I don't want to do it anymore, even though he's really good. Just wait to see.
This is true. This is where I tweeted it out, but this is where I want to see how much they get to John Collins at the five, Asar Thompson at the four. Now, to your point, it would be a great irony and also upsetting to me and my homies if they get to that alignment and teams are like, cool, we're going to put our center on Asar. We're going to put a wing on John Collins. We're going to switch this anyway. And I'm like, well, darn. That was the alignment to get him at the five, and they're still treating him like a four. That would make me sad. But he is a very good basketball player. To that point, and if he is able to get drop or any other coverage aside from switches, like the roll threat you did, he finishes everything. He just has to get those passes in flow. I'll just quickly say Norm Powell leaving Miami, kind of knew that based on the financial constraints, but Norm Powell to Chicago, interesting to me at the very least. They want to play fast. They've added a lot of skill size. Now you have guard that will drive and knock down shots. You can open up the playbook with some off ball movement. That is fascinating to me, Steve. Luke Kennard in Phoenix, you trade away Grayson Allen. Let's get a 3-point shooter in the room. Let's see what the volume is going to look like there. But that is fascinating. If we're talking about spinning the block, Nikola Vucevic back to Orlando is a funny one for me. But nah, that's not there you the go. Block.
That's I want to stay home.
I'm going home.
This ain't the safe space. Vucevic's on the couch. He's like, you know what? Hey. Yeah, I'm cool.
Open up. Oh, dear. Okay, finally, and then we will move. Tim Hardaway Jr., you are in Miami Heat, third and sixth man of the year voting last year. Volume 3-point shooting should help. Andrew Wiggins is back, though an opt-in and extend versus like the opt-out and extend is interesting to me. Simone Fontecchio also back in Miami. We will see what that part is going to look like. And literal final thing as we go to break, Steve, we got Vegas Summer League next week. But, buddy, the California Classic starts this weekend. Salt Lake City Summer League starting on Saturday. We are about to get some looks at some rookies. I am excited to get my eyes on these guys, see what y'all trying to do, what the skill sets are, et cetera. I am fascinated by Summer League action starting. We got more basketball while we're in the midst of all the free agency stuff. So, also, if you are in California, if you're in Salt Lake, you want to go to those games, check out the Game Time app. I want to tap in, get your first look at some of these lottery picks, et cetera. Now, we're going to take a break. When we return, we shift to the W side. I try to keep my spirits up, but boy, do I have some thoughts on all-star voting as the starters were announced, and we're going to bounce around the league as well. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot as we shift to the W and just want to get to a quick pivot at the very top. We have a lot of all-star things and general bounce around content to get to. But as we're recording, shout out Tony East, does great work with the Indiana Fever and also the Indiana Pacers for the NBA fans that are listening. But Caitlin Clark released a statement. First time media has gotten to talk to her since the incident with Alyssa Thomas. And we got pretty much 5 straight minutes of Caitlin Clark just kind of laying things out. She said she thought that the interaction with Alyssa Thomas, the loose ball dive, et cetera, she thought it was a flagrant foul. Also said refs have to be better because, you know, that wasn't called live, et cetera. She was disappointed by the way that everything's been talked about and how long it's been talked about. She mentioned watching games over the weekend and they were still discussing the foul versus anything else. But again, mentioned referees have to be better. Said players have to be nicer to the refs. Refs need to be paid better to get better refereeing in the league. Talked about the way that the league itself is covered, and that she felt kind of disservice to her team and just the league itself, that the way that this was discussed kind of overshadowed the games that were being played. She mentioned, hey, we just had a blowout win, and instead of talking about that, we were still talking about the foul from, what, last Wednesday, I think is what it was. And so, Steve, you've gotten a list of the video. I've gotten a list of the video before we got back to recording. How did you feel about her statements? Anything you wanted to add, or where are you at?
We listened to it together to a degree, and I think it's just important to understand there are things at play that you have to address. But at the same time, I'm happy that we are saying no to the harassment, no to the hate. Let's talk about the game of basketball. These women are playing at a high level. This league is so competitive. And let's focus in on that. And let's celebrate the efforts that they make every single night. Let's highlight how good this league is on a night-to-night basis. Every single night, you are getting banger after banger. And so let's make sure we do that. And let's keep that nonsense to the side. And because there's a lot of people who want to operate in that arena, there's a lot of people who want to make that a thing. And I say, I rebuke everything you want to do. Because look, I'm easy to find. I'm hard to beat. So I don't want to hear what you have to say about any of that. So good on Caitlin Clark for standing on business to a degree. And let's talk about the game of basketball. And I'm sure you want to talk about the game of basketball, because I'm sure you want to talk about these all-stars and Kaius Duncan.
Oh, boy. I have a lot of thoughts on the all-star portion. Like, you know, we can go there. I will just give the quick salute to Caitlin Clark for, again, speaking her mind, being open to media. Also, once again, saying, like, hey, all of the hate and all of the harassment tied to whatever you may feel on the basketball side is not right, does not stand for it, et cetera. And that's kind of the annoying thing for me, Steve, that like every time there is, even independent of Caitlin herself, but every time there is some sort of, there's a foul or a physical interaction or whatever, it's not, let's talk about that play and what a player could have did differently, how the refs could contain the game better, et cetera. It turns into there's jealousy and there's, it just goes so far left. People that don't watch the league hop in, inflaming toxicity, and even worse, like it's sexism. It's all kind of thing. It just should not get to that point. And so it's always tough for me to kind of balance, this is nonsense, so I'm not giving it the time of day, versus this is bad and unfair and nasty and disgusting, and I kind of need to speak out as a member of the media to denounce this stuff. I'm still trying to find that balance, to be transparent. But I'm glad that Caitlin spoke out. I am glad that Alyssa Thomas earlier this week spoke out about the harassment that she and her family was receiving. And like, that is, there's no place for that either. We just need to be better collectively. I think that was the heart of the message. And so that is where I will end it. We can now shift to all-star talk, Steve, because we got the starters announced. On the guard side, Paige Bueckers, you are in. Olivia Miles, you are in. Caitlin Clark, you are in. Kelsey Mitchell, you are in. In the front court, Asia Wilson, you are in. Breonna Stewart, Jessica Shepherd, Aaliyah Boston, Gabby Williams, Natasha Howard, you are all in. Read those in the order of the weighted score for all 10 players. But those are your all-star starters. Are you okay with those starters, Steve? Any surprises among the 10?
No, I mean, we do these segments all the time. We do the build-up. We have opposing personalities to a degree. So I was like, yeah, I told you from the first one we did. If you're talking about the all-star guards, buddy, turn four into three. And then I said turn three into two, because Caitlin Clark and Paige are going to be there. That's going to happen. So I think what you mean by it, like, I don't have any surprises to a degree. I think I was surprised by the fan support for Jessica Shepherd and Natasha Howard to a degree. And the balance that had with Angel Reese's case. And those three kind of being in a different dynamic and how that balanced things out. Because Angel Reese was voted as an all-star by the players, by the media, by the fans, and is not an all-star starter. So that's where like the weighted score becomes important, because if 50% of the vote comes to the fans. And like, for me, basketball is subjective. I'm not going to sit here and stand on my pulpit and yell at people and say, hey, why'd you vote for your favorite basketball player? Like, that's not my job. I don't feel comfortable doing that. So I think it's more so Caitlin, Paige, Olivia, all we're going to play well. Which Kelsey is going to be? Kelsey Plum got hurt. Kelsey Plum never gets the votes from the players, ever. It's never been a thing. It's just, for whatever reason, yeah. Kelsey Plum's player vote has always been low. So if she didn't get the fan vote at a certain level, it was going to be Kelsey Mitchell. Kelsey Mitchell is deserving because of how well she's played this year. I think with the bigs, I think it's interesting to see Jessica and Natasha both make it. Like, I think that's fascinating as far as having that kind of support from the fans and the media to a degree. But I don't have too many arguments. Do you feel a certain way about the All-Star voting? Should we, production team, should we call the police? Was there a robbery?
Oh boy, I tell you what, I do earn, and again, mentioned earlier in the show on the NBA section, we've been doing this podcast for over 5 years. And I think through different portions across the NBA and the W, I've kind of poked at fans being like, this player got robbed. I'm just like, well, no, like, there may be something that you disagree with in some of these cases that you're bringing up. It's very rare that we actually get a legit robbery in my eyes when it comes to selections. I do feel like Ryan Howard got the short end of the stick here. I do think Ryan Howard got robbed from a starting spot. And I think it starts at the top, in which Ryan Howard has been listed as a guard. And by, you know, asking around, trying to figure out, like, who determines the designations for the positions. From what was relayed to me, that starts on the team side with how they're listed. And thus, you see that in the game notes, et cetera. And as recently as the June 24th matchup with the Golden State Valkyries, I think there was a second matchup. You look at the game notes, it is guard Jordan Canada, guard Alicia Gray, guard Ryan Howard, forward Nas Hillman, center Angel Reese, where I'm just like, well, I feel like the front court could probably be swapped. But ultimately, Ryan Howard listed as the nominal three, but still gets the guard tag. And she has been listed as a guard all year long, despite being the nominal three in Atlanta, as she has been for most of her career. And so thus, the league has her in the guard group. And as I tweeted about, and as I told you, this should not be the case for very obvious reasons. And because she's going to be in the guard group with Caitlin and Paige and Olivia Miles, and when healthy, Kelsey Plum and Kelsey Mitchell, for her playing well and also playing in Indiana and getting the Caitlin boost on top of that, and all these talented guards, I was like, hey, I'm going to be kind of upset if Ryan Howard, who I believe has just been starter good, kind of gets shafted because she's in the wrong position group. And lo and behold, the media had her in. The players had her in. The fans did not. And so while you do not want to yell at the fans for voting for their favorite basketball players, I kind of do. Because how do you not get Ryan Howard in? I think just for what she's been tasked with doing on both ends of the floor, and Steve, I was looking up some things ahead of the podcast. I wanted to get a graphic together. I was like, the bulk of the case for me with Ryan Howard being an all-star starter, whether she's listed at guard, she shouldn't have been, but she is, or if she was in the front court. There are not many players in the league that are tasked with doing what she does on both ends of the floor and do as well as she does it. And so I went to Second Spectrum. I was like, is there a way that I can, like, quantify this? Because you watch it, you see the matchups that she takes on defensively. You obviously see she has the playmaking load, she has the scoring load, et cetera. And I was like, okay, how many players have defended, like, the all-star group of guards? Just looked at the top 11 from the guard votes. Who's guarded those players the most? You know who the answer is? Ryan Howard. 279 touches entering this weekend's action. There are only five players in the league that have defended that cast of all-star candidates over 200 times or with over 200 touches. It's Ryan Howard, it's Kayla McBride, it's Gabby Williams, it's Sonya Citron, it's Sarah Ashley Barker. So Ryan, number one in the list in total touches defended there. 0.85 points per possession allowed on those trips, which is a very high number. The only player with a lower mark among that top five is Sonya Citron, who we'll talk about a little bit later because she has an all-star case. Then you go to the offensive workload. Who's doing that, guarding those kind of assignments, and also has legit offensive responsibility? Ryan Howard, 63 touches per game. Kayla McBride, 36.1. Gabby Williams, 45.7. Sonya Citron, 55.8. Sarah Ashley Barker, 38.1. Sonya Citron is the only person that comes close to that two-way load that Ryan Howard has. and doing so on one of the best teams in the league. And it is unbelievable to me that this ends with her. She's still going to be an all-star, so there's only a certain level I could get upset about because she's going to be there. But her not being a starter really does not sit well with me. And it starts from the positional designation and even beyond that. We just have to understand and respect what she is tasked with doing on both ends of the floor every night. Now, to be fair, Ryan could have helped herself out with, as we live in a world, humans are voting on this, and thus recency bias is a thing. You enter the final week of voting, you had a chance to put a stamp on your case and to earn more of the fan vote. And you respond with 12 points against the Golden State Valkyries in a loss, 9 points against the Golden State Valkyries in a loss, in a game where I thought she overall played well and just did not shoot well, though she did have the late turnover in that fourth quarter, the same fourth quarter that Gabby Williams, who gets in over Angel Reese, loses her mind in that fourth quarter. So you have the loud moment there. And then she had 27 against Seattle, but that was another loss. No Nas Hillman at that one, back to back. But you go three straight losses into your final week slash that Saturday where voting ends. And so for Ryan, a win and or a bigger performance against the Valkyries in either of those two matchups probably helps in that regard. But you zoom out for what this season has been. Like, she has just been, she has been a top four guard, if that's where you want to put her. She has been a top 10 player in the league, in my opinion. And it is just wild to me that this is where we are. Now, since that second Valkyries game, she has now been listed in the game notes as a small forward. So hopefully moving forward, she is just going to be in the, she's going to be listed as a three and thus in the front court group. So hopefully we don't have to do this next year. But this is where we are. This is why I'm annoyed.
You are making, here's the problem, right?
Okay.
That front court group isn't kind.
It's not.
If Asia Wilson, Stewie, Aaliyah Boston are playing basketball, three of your six slots are gone. You're going to be in a battle either way, right? And so you're going to have to play at a high enough level. If Angel Reese takes that leaf, four of your six slots are gone. If Alyssa Thomas, if the Mercury were winning, Alyssa Thomas would be in this discussion again. Five of your slots are gone. So you're in the same battle, whether you're in the front court or the back court. Should have given permission to vote.
Okay.
So what I'm saying, like, it's not that Ryan Howard's not an all-star. She's an all-star 10 out of 10 times. We can agree on that. The fan vote is the fan vote, and the fan vote is 50% of the battle. So the faves are going to be voted in. Perception in this era, in this day and age, becomes more important. You can argue whether it should or should not, but this is a perception-based world. If people perceive you at a certain level, they will discuss you at a certain level. It's unfortunate, but Ryan Howard's great. Ryan Howard will be an all-star. Being an all-star starter is difficult because there are so many things that are out of your control. So control what you can control. Be a tremendous basketball player who continues to impact the game every single night. And eventually that should weigh things out. Think about that, right? Like Ryan Howard, you can go on the Ryan Howard got robbed. Kelsey Plum never gets player votes and probably will never be an all-star starter, no matter how good she plays. Not contrasting them, but like these are just the realities of the world. It's a knock on the door. For some, you gotta exceed and go beyond all expectations, and even that might land you in a different door. So, like, I get it, but also, this is for the fans. Like, I don't want to sit here and say, "Hey, I'm so mad at you people for voting for your favorite player. I'm so mad at the media for thinking that these people are good. I'm so mad at the players for why are we delivering so much outrage?" Why is that the route we're going?
I think the simple answer for me is, like, again, this is all within a basketball context. Obviously, there are real world things that matter a lot more to me than basketball, if we're doing like the literal comparison. But within a basketball context, like, I do just, one, generally care. And I want these players highlighted and celebrated to an appropriate degree. And so for me, I 100% agree with you that whether Ryan was listed as a guard or listed in the front court, she was going to have she's going to have a battle on her hands. And to your point, like if he was healthy, if AT and the Mercury were better, then she may have still been out. If it's going to be a battle, I still want her to have, I want her to fight the correct battle. Like I do think just off principle, I know you joke it, you laugh at me with some of that, but like put her in the right spot. Like, I don't think that's a controversial opinion. Like if she loses out because Fee and AT are healthy and they're better, et cetera, then it's like, okay, you're an all-star. That's just a tough group versus you ain't even supposed to be here. And then on top of that, you're losing out.
It's,
you know what I mean? Like that just annoys.
It's a big league, Nikias. It's a big league.
And that's
fine. You can make an MVP case for five players that are bigs to be the MVP most years. And that's not even as many like, people that exist. Like, I'm just like, I'm not disagreeing with you. I understand your perspective, but the amount of great players that are bigs will put you at a disadvantage. It will put you at a disadvantage. If we just literally said Asia Wilson, Stewie, Alyssa Thomas, Nafisa Collier, that is four out of six slots that are out of here. You want that fight? You want the guard fight? Which one do you want? Where do you go? How do you handle that? So while I understand the moral perspective of robbery and all that, I get it. But where are you going to be best positioned at? Because if this league adds another big that's really good, that's five slots out of six. Out of here, gone, done. You don't have a shot. So you're either going to fight for one of these guard spots, or you're going to fight for one of these front court spots. Which one are you will like? Which one is going to garner you the most popularity if you cook? That's where my brain goes to.
No, I understand where that's coming from. I guess I'll just quickly say before we move off of the starter portion of this conversation, like one, my answer is still like put her in the right group, and two, to bounce off of your guard point for earlier. Caitlin's going to be baked in with the fan vote. Paige is going to be baked in with the fan vote. If this is year one of Olivia Miles, I would imagine it's just going to get better moving forward. So that may just be three. And you know who was fourth among the fans in guard votes, Steve?
Who?
AZ Fudd.
No. So, I mean, I'm gonna pivot what you did there because this was not a Sabrina year. You got to remember that portion.
There's also that. Yeah.
This is not a Sabrina year. So it's difficult. Like being an all-star is hard. You got to play at a great level. And Ryan Howard will be an all-star. So reserves. Who do we have? What do you have? Who do you got? Who are your reserves?
Okay. Well, for me, first to lay it out, for the reserves, decide who the reserves are. It's three guard spots. It's five front court spots. And then it's three wild cards to get you in the door. And so I think for me, the initial guard spots for me, Ryan Howard is in for reasons that I listed, and she should just be starting, in my opinion, but that is what it is. Ryan Howard is in. I think Marina Mabry is in. I think she has clearly had the best individual performance of the season with her 53-point game, but even independent of that, the scoring has been there, the efficiency has been there. She certainly had to take on a larger offensive role with Brittany Sykes now, and the tempo of being in the playoff put. I think Marina Mabry is in. Sonya Citron would probably be my third guard, just firmly in, for what she's doing on both ends of the floor. She was a part of that Ryan graphic, but overall, we've talked about the Mystics as they are also in the playoff hunt and are coming off of a win against the Atlanta Dream with no Sonya Citron, so we'll see when she's back. But assuming it's not a long-term injury, the way she's been moved around the board offensively, we get pick and rolls, handoffs, occasional post-ups, she's defending tough assignments, I think she's in. In the front court, Angel Reese, who you alluded to, was technically voted in. Oh, go ahead.
Let's sit with the backcourt before we go to the front court. Because I'm with you. I got Ryan Howard in. Ryan Howard's an all-star. No doubt about it. Don't even think about it. Marina Mabry is an all-star. No doubt about it. Throw it in there.
Okay.
I think Kelsey Plum's an all-star. She may not play in the game because she's out. I think Kelsey Plum should be recognized for the efforts that she made. One, in her growth. And two, for the Sparks this season. I don't think that should be ignored.
Okay. So I guess I want to hang there real quick with a free throw. So just off of that, when it comes to players like Kelsey Plum, would you rather the voters, fans, et cetera, like vote her in and then, hey, Lee, you just got to earn the replacement? Or do you say, okay, she is not playing, so thus a slot?
Yes.
Okay.
No. I think it's more of yes. Okay. I think, If you have earned that right, you should get that right. And if there's a replacement that has to be had, let's make that happen. But like, I don't want to say, oh, well, you're hurt, so I don't want to recognize your efforts. That should go on your resume for the rest of your career. You played at a high enough level. We should recognize that. If you played that good, let's say you played that good, and let's move forward. As opposed to, well, Kelsey Plum is not going to be available, so I'm not going to vote an all-star. That's, you can't tell me Kelsey Plum's not an all-star this year. Mm-hmm. You just can't. So those are my three as far as the guards go.
Okay. No, I think that is absolutely fair. I think the only thing, I think that holds logically, and you're not the first person I've heard say this. And I think the only thing that kind of kept me is like, yes, Kelsey Plum is going to be out, but it's like Kelsey Plum's going to be out and she's played 12 games to this point. Is the only thing, like, as the sample grows before we end voting and things like that, it's just going to be like a games gap on top of that with a tough guard field. And so that's where it kind of got dice for me. Cause like, but as I said on this podcast, I feel like she's been the best guard in the league this year when she's been on the court. And as I've also been screaming, as people like, well, no Kelsey, because the Sparks are here in the standings. The Sparks have a winning record in the games that Kelsey Plum has played. They have a losing record overall, but when she has been available, they have won more than they lost. I feel like that just got lost in the shuffle. But for me, it's just like, you have played at this level. I think teams have, players have just been on the court more than you. And like that part hurts. But like, I think that is sound logic. Like, let's get, you know, if you feel like she's been that good, give her the slot, and then we just get the replacement in, so everyone kind of gets in. I think that makes sense. Front court for me, Angel Reese, who, as you mentioned already, was voted in by the players, the media, and the fans as an all-star. It's just the way to score, and like Gabby being ahead in certain areas, Natasha Howard being ahead in certain areas, she ends up getting pushed out. But was technically voted in as a starter by everyone. She is obviously going to be an all-star, and should be an all-star. So Angel Reese is in for me. Jonquel Jones is in for me. And as we talked about on the last check-in, like, she was one of the last ones out for me for what she's been doing on both ends of the floor. But Jonquel Jones is in. I think Alyssa Thomas should still be in. I think she has been very good. She has been offered for MVP level that we've seen in previous years. And obviously the Mercury are further down in the standings for people that care about that portion. But she's still leading the league in assists. She still crashes the glass. She is still defending at a solid level. Like, team-wide, it's been kind of a mess. But I think she has been, again, offer DPOY level for that matter, but still has been a positive defender in my opinion. Alyssa Thomas is in. Kiki Arifin is in for me. And boy, I had to do some digging between her and Shakira Austin. It really depends on what night you get Shakira on, but interior efficiency, Kiki gets the edge there. Neko Gumake ended up being my final front court spot there. And so before we get into the wild cards, who would be your five front court pieces, Steve?
We agreed. We have the same front court.
We got the same.
Everyone. Everyone in your car, at your table, eating your lunch, eating your snack. We agreed.
How about that? I'm so excited.
Now the wild cards. Oh, I don't know if we're going to agree anymore.
Bookmark that moment because that might be the only moment we got. Okay. Wild cards for me. Jackie Young, you are an all-star.
Agreed. I'll update this in real time. Agreed. Go on.
Okay. There we go. So we got Jackie. I have Courtney Williams in.
Oh.
Uh-oh. Well, friends, we did. It was fun while it lasted. Oh, dear. Steve was not expecting the Courtney Williams nod. That's unbelievable. Okay, so we got Jackie Young in. Again, like, not the best start to the season for her. It was the shot making. Like, obviously, like, the 0 point games are the loudest piece, but like, she was still trying to figure out things offensively with how defense would guard her, et cetera. She has been electric since that start. And I think if she was playing at the level that we've seen in June, like, she's probably just a starter and complicates the guard conversation even more. If she was playing at the level. But either way, Jackie's in. Courtney Williams is in, as she has shifted. Two more of the two with Olivia Miles in tow. Efficiency has been up. Three-point shooting has been there. Still provides the secondary playmaking. Defense has been fine for me. But she's been very good. And so Courtney Williams is in for me. And then the final wild card spot, Steve, as I was trying to sort through this yesterday, I typed in Gray, and I just didn't know which one I was going to go with for the final spot. I ended up landing on Chelsea Gray as the final wild card spot. The playmaking.
What do you mean the
timely shot making?
What do you mean? Go ahead. What do you mean the final wild card spot? Don't you need four? Is it not three?
do I have three guards, five wild three, card? I mean, three guards, five front court.
Three, five, four, mate.
Oh, well, I can add another one then. Fantastic. I must have misread the okay, fair enough. I can add another player. In that case, I could just add Chelsea Gray and Alicia Gray to the list. And that would be the bid for me in the wild card spot.
Oh, you have Chelsea and Alicia. Okay. Okay. I have Alicia Gray, I have Jackie Young, I have Sonya Citron, and the fourth wild card spot threw me for a loop. Because the first thing I typed was Dominique Malanga.
Mm-hmm. She's been very good.
I don't know if the world's paying attention. She's been extremely good. But then I was like, ooh, you know what? Have we recognized the historic Camila Cardoso in the run that she's been on? And when you look at it, I understand that I might get yelled at.
Okay.
But you tell me a player that is top 25 in scoring, has this many rebounds per game, blocks per game, field goal percentage, I'm asking a question more than I'm presenting an opinion. Would you ever put Camila Cardoso as an all-star? Ooh, nasty question.
Would I ever? That's a crazy framing to that. My answer is unbelievable framing. Have Camila Cardoso as an all-star if I felt she played at an all-star level. Absolutely. I do not think she has consistently been there this year.
Oh.
I think the high water marks of the Camila season, you already mentioned, like the, hey, what if I just don't miss a shot and I set the W record for that? I think the seals in particular can be incredibly strong. The rebounding certainly helps, the playmaking when they dial it up for her above the break. There are easy pathways for her providing all-star level value. And I think we have seen this in stretches this year where the defense is like, okay, cool. And a drop, get up to the level sometimes. This is what it can look like. She just has not hit those notes consistently enough for me to have her as an all-star reserve.
Understood. I if I had a pin, I'd probably go Alicia Gray, Jackie Young, Sonya Citron, and Courtney Williams. Would be my four wild cards. That's probably where I'd go. Okay. Now let's very quickly go through some like names, question mark, eyebrow raising. Let's serve the public. Where's Veronica Burton for you? How close did she come to a wild card spot?
On the list in my notes, the efficiency is where I was like, I just need more finishing from her. Like the 3-point shooting has tailed off from where it started from, but still fine, especially with her personal history with 3-point shot. But just has not made enough shots inside the arc for me. Has gotten downhill, but the finishing hasn't quite been there. And it hasn't been like an extreme bump in like free throw rate to kind of offset that. But the defense has still been very good. And obviously she is still important to what the Golden State Valkyries do. But like I couldn't quite get there with Veronica Burton.
Understood. Okay. If the Sky or Mercury had better records, would we be talking about Skylar Diggins and or Kalia Copper?
I would say no to Skylar. Ka, I think if it's this recent stretch of Ka, then maybe. Because you zoom out, she's averaging 20 a game. And over her last seven, also had this in the notes, 27 points per game on 68, 33, 79 shooting splits. And obviously the high water mark was the 41-10 game against the Sparks, where Kelsey Plum also lost her mind in that game and ultimately won that game during his win streak, three straight games over 25. So, like, if it was more of that version of Kyle, yes. Has not shot well enough. Similar off-ball defense quibbles that I've had with her pretty consistently. And then you don't have, like, the record bump on top of that. So, like, couldn't quite get there. Had her name down, but couldn't quite get there.
Very quickly, shout out to Rekia Jackson. I think she would have had a case. Shout out to Brittany Sykes. I think they would have had a case. If there was a Portland Fire rep, would it have been Bridget Carlton or Carla Late?
Carla Late for me. I think the scoring playmaking blend would have been the answer for me. She's also someone that I had written down. But did you know she's fourth in clutch points this year, Steve?
I did, because that's what the Fire did until they were not in clutch moments. For 2 weeks.
Yeah, it was very funny watching, like looking up like some of the clutch stats in preparation for this pod, and it is just a whole bunch of Mystics and Fire, and it's like, I wonder if there was a game that would have allowed them to rack up some numbers on that front. But yes, I had Carla late down. Richard Carlton is having a good season, to be clear. But between the two, I probably would have went Carla late.
Okay. Anyone else you want to clear out before we get out of here, brother?
Yes, actually. With Atlanta, how do you feel about the Jordan Canada case?
Her name was down with a question mark, for sure. Okay. I think for me, it's just like, okay, I asked Veronica Burton, is Jordan Canada that much better than Veronica Burton, depending on like what their teams need from them? So it's not that Jordan Canada is not deserving of an all-star or not. It's just like, okay, are we giving you four all-stars, Atlanta Dream?
Mm-hmm. I mean, they got zero starters, so I mean, that's a way to balance it out. But I had Jordan Canada on the list. Ultimately, obviously didn't make it because I listed out my team. But 11 points, career high in assists for her, career high in rebounds for her, over 2 steals per game, 3rd in total drives, leading the league in clutch steals if you care about that piece. She's had herself a quality year. One of the Atlanta Dream thoughts that I've kind of had in the back of my brain is like, I appreciate how well Jordan Canada is playing right now. I'm slightly concerned by how much the Dream kind of need Jordan Canada in the half court, because ideally you would want your two all-star wings to like take on more of the, but she's having a good year. Want to say her name. How do you feel about the AZ Flood case?
Not this year. It could come going forward. I think the fan vote will be strong. I think it's just more like she's had a good year, and but I don't think this is the year. Especially with the way that Olivia Miles played. Like, I think AZ Flood's been good, but I don't know if this is the exact moment to crown AZ as an all-star, despite like the clutch buckets, the defense, the confidence growing. I don't know if this is the year for that. It'll come.
Okay. The crown. I see what you did there. It's good stuff. One of 3 players right now averaging at least a steal and a half and a block. Asia Wilson, Emily Inksler. The only 2 players doing that. So quick shout out to AZ Fudd. I hate Kayla McBride's name down. I was between her and Courtney Williams. The defense for Kayla McBride has been very good. Hasn't shot the 3 at the same level, but has had a good season overall. Playmaking continues to impress me, even if the assist numbers don't show it. Very good passer. Mentioned Shakir Austin. You already hit on Don Malanga. I'm trying to think, is there anyone else that deserves a quick shout here before we get out of here? I think that does it, Steve. I think that does it.
Well, I mean, you got to acknowledge the walking comeback, the immediate run stopper, Lee Rue.
The walking comeback, the run stopper. You know what? Actually, we're going to stop. Thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of the Dunker Spot. Please subscribe if you haven't already, or if you haven't turned this off after the walking comeback was dropped as a nickname for Lee Yeru. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo Sports main YouTube channel if the walking comeback didn't fry you. That's where our W content will reside. Subscribe to the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel if you want all of our free agency / trade / summer league thoughts and whatever else happens on that front. You can follow me on socials at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on socials at SteveJones20. And with that, we hope you come back when we return next week.